France was forced to withdraw troops from former colonies, Burkina Faso, the Central African Republic, and from Mali. This was not a matter of choice, and it is quite evident since France still desires to have some kind of military footprint in these countries.
Au fond, la logique, c'est que notre modèle ne doit plus être celui de bases militaires telles qu'elles existent aujourd'hui.
The French President Emmanuel Macron must have deemed Africa to be so important that he decided on this tour. He urged French companies to bid for contracts in Africa and to be more respectful of African nations. But the French president may have an ulterior motive behind his visit. Russia. France was forced to withdraw its forces from Mali last year after the junta opted to work with Russian forces. And to add salt to injury, the Central African Republic had also chosen to work with Russian forces. This was a big worry for France, since there was now a domino effect which excluded France, coming at a time when Western countries are trying to lobby the global south against Russia over its special military operation in Ukraine. African countries' decision to work with Russia may be a reflection of a bigger wave of anti-Western sentiments, which is not restricted to France only. The U.S. has also fallen behind in Africa, and like France, not only blasts Russia for its presence in Africa, but has also slammed China for its investments in the continent. The former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton couldn't make it any clearer when he said, predatory practices by China and Russia stunt economic growth in Africa and threaten nations' economic independence. It appears that African nations are no longer buying that view and have made the shift to countries that are providing them with what they want, security cooperation and trade rewards, as is the case with Russia and China, in line with the new world order that is taking shape.
From our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamate began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Ja'far, Muhammad ibn Ali al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Ja'far, Muhammad the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, the Messenger of Allah. And His Eminence was also the ninth divinely appointed Imam from among the household of the Messenger of Allah, the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Narrators have related that on one occasion, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was asked 30,000 questions, and His Eminence, the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, answered every single one of them. Now, it is natural that there is no rational justification to this amazing and even confusing matter of an individual being able to answer 30,000 questions, except that which the Shias believe, and that is that Allah has endowed the infallible imams of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhis salam, peace and blessings upon them, with knowledge, wisdom, and virtues, with the likes of which no one else amongst the people has ever been endowed. Such was Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, the ninth divinely appointed Imam. So, dear friends, of course, in the divinely appointed Imam's conversations, we find that His Eminence really spoke about a whole variety of different things. One of the things that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam spoke to his companions about, of course, was the idea of friendship. And in the modern day, in the present day, of course, friendship is one of the things that every single one of us has experienced or is experiencing. We find that in our youth, we are very excited to find friends, to make friends, to have friends. It seems like every single one of us wants to have a best friend, a friend in which we can confide in, talk, and share our secrets and spend all of our time with. And so friendship, even though it must be done in a very careful manner, it is something that is relatively necessary for every single one of us. Now, how much and how close we become friends with individuals is a discussion for a separate topic. But for right now, we just need to keep in mind that friendship is something which, if done in the correct manner, is something that is recommended and it is something that is useful. But on the other hand, it can also be a double-edged sword, meaning it can be good, but it can also be bad. Now, here we find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam was speaking to his companion and he said to him, "Beware of accompanying an evildoer because they are like a drawn sword, whose look is quite nice, but its effect is quite bad." Now, we've always heard of the term birds of a feather flock together. We have heard of the term one bad apple makes the bushel go bad, and these kind of things, right? What do these sayings mean? Well, of course, if you start to hang out and be friends with a certain kind of individual, in this case, an evildoer, well, eventually those evil actions of that evildoer will start to rub off on you, and you will start to do those as well. And on the other hand, of course, one bad apple. If you have one evildoer amongst your company and amongst your friends, then again, that individual will have a negative influence on everybody else. Here in this conversation, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, of course, is saying to be very careful of and to be wary of accompanying and being friends with somebody who is an evildoer, because it's a double-edged sword. Of course, it is like a drawn sword, in his own words, meaning that it's nice to look at, it's very shiny, it's very beautiful, but the effects are very deadly and very dangerous. Of course, this is why we are saying that a friendship is a good thing, but with its conditions, with its requirements. Of course, being friends with people that are noble, that are honorable, that are just, that are fair, that are religious, and that are good people. These are the people that we should be friends with. And of course, if we find that an individual is committing a lot of sins and is a bad individual, then we must make sure to not associate with such people, because they are definitely like a drawn sword. Their effect will be deadly and dangerous. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
From our Imams, the ninth Imam is the first, whose Imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9 years old. Basically, look at the special wisdom that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given to our ninth Imam. What is zinat? Beauty. But let us go to the hadith of the Imam, where Imam talks about a zinat in a very different level. That Imam talks about the beauty of speech. وَالْفَصَاحَةُ زِينَةُ الْكَلَامِ. Kalam means speech. Human beings all have the ability to speak. But then in this common, you know, ability of all human beings to talk, Imam says if you look for the beauty in that, it's eloquence, fasahat. Eloquence is beauty of the speech. And so, you know, the person who has worked hard on this and is able to present himself more eloquent, this will be considered as a zenith of the speech of that individual.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
¶¶
پیغمبر اکرم فرمودن بهترین شما کسی است که با خانواده.
The Holy Prophet of Islam in a narration states, "The best of you among the people is the one that behaves properly with his family, even better than with the people outside." This means to have the best behavior inside our house. Prophet Muhammad himself was the best example in this regard. Although not all the wives of Prophet Muhammad behaved properly inside the house, he reacted in the best way possible and never misconducted inside the house.
اگر اولویتمون خدا باشد، ببینید اولویت ما اگر خدا باشد.
If our priority in life is Allah, then any kind of hardship will be tolerable for us. Also, if Allah is preferred to anything in our life, then all of our deeds will be only for the sake of Allah. Our good behavior with our family members will also be a way to get closer to Allah, because He wants us to behave properly with our family members. Our trade of love in such cases is directly with Allah.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Olema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
In the limelight.
Prominent lawyers, journalists, and human rights defenders say prosecuting Assange poses a grave threat to journalism. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote in this regard, Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg joined other leading journalists, attorneys, and human rights defenders to call on Biden administration to drop its extradition request and indictment against journalist and WikiLeaks publisher Julian Assange, citing the grave threat Assange's prosecution would pose to journalism worldwide. Every empire requires secrecy to cloak its acts of violence that maintain it as an empire, Ellsberg testified during the Belmarsh Tribunal held on January 20th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. The tribunal is named after London's high-security Belmarsh prison, where Assange has been held for nearly 4 years, fighting extradition to the U.S. the Belmarsh Tribunal, inspired by the Russell Starte Tribunal of the Vietnam War, was sponsored by Democracy Now!, Defending Rights and Dissent, Courage Foundation, DIEM25, The Intercept, The Nation, and the PEN International. Assange is charged with violations of the Espionage Act for exposing evidence of U.S. war crimes and faces 175 years in prison if convicted. Former British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn explained that if Assange is sentenced to life in a maximum security prison in the United States, it will have a chilling effect on journalists. Corbyn said that every journalist throughout the world will think, oh, should I really report this information I have been given? Should I really speak about this denial of human rights, a miscarriage of justice in any country around the world? Because the long arm of the United States Espionage Act might reach me, an extradition treaty might put me in that same prison. Philosopher, author, and political activist Sereko Horvat, co-chair of the tribunal, noted that the U.S. government is nominally advocating freedom of press, but at the same time continues the persecution of a publisher, Julian Assange. When Biden was running for president in 2020, he declared on World Press Freedom Day, "We all stand in solidarity with 360 journalists in prison worldwide for their work in journalism." Biden quoted Thomas Jefferson's 1786 statement, saying, "Our liberty depends on the freedom of the press, and that cannot be limited without being lost." Since Biden's election, however, his administration has refused to dismiss the charges Donald Trump brought against Assange. Biden ignored the fact that the Obama-Biden administration, which prosecuted more whistleblowers under the Espionage Act than all its predecessors combined, refused to indict Assange because of the New York Times problem. If they charged Assange, the Obama administration reasoned they would have to charge the New York Times and other media outlets that also published classified military and diplomatic secrets. Hovart said, "Every country has secrecy laws. Some countries have very draconian secrecy laws. If those countries tried to extradite New York Times reporters and publishers to those countries for publishing their secrets, we would cry foul, and rightly so. Does this administration want to be the first to establish the global precedent that countries can demand the extradition of foreign reporters and publishers for violating their own laws?" On November 28, 2022, the New York Times, The Guardian, Le Monde, Der Spiegel, and El Pais signed a joint open letter calling on Biden to drop the Espionage Act charges against Assange. They wrote, "Publishing is not a crime," noting that Assange is the first publisher to be charged under the Espionage Act for revealing government secrets. In 2010, the five signatories to the open letter collaborated with WikiLeaks to publish Cablegate, 251,000 confidential U.S. State Department cables that disclose corruption, diplomatic scandals, and spy affairs on an international scale. The documents, according to New York Times, revealed the unvarnished story of how the government makes its biggest decisions, the decisions that cost the country most heavily in lives and money. Assange's indictment also stems from WikiLeaks' revelation of the Iraq war logs, 400,000 field reports that chronicled 15,000 unreported deaths of Iraqi civilians, the systematic rape, torture, and murder after U.S. forces handed over detainees to a notorious Iraqi torture squad. And the indictment covered the Afghan war diary, 91,000 reports of larger number of civilian casualties by coalition forces than the U.S. military had reported. The most notorious release by WikiLeaks was 2007 collateral murder video, which showed a U.S. Army Apache attack helicopter target and kill 11 unarmed civilians, including two Reuters News staff and a man who came to rescue the wounded. Two children were injured. The video clip reveals evidence of three violations of the Geneva Conventions and the U.S. Army Field Manual. Amy Goodman, co-host of Democracy Now! And the Tribunal's other co-chair, said that the events depicted in the collateral murder video would never have happened if the Iraq war logs had been made public 6 months ago. An investigation would have been launched, Goodman speculated. That's why freedom of the press, the free flow of information, saves lives. She said that it is not just freedom of the press at stake in Assange's prosecution, but also the public's right of access to information. Ironically, Assange first screened the collateral murder video at the National Press Club more than a decade ago. But as Ben Wisner, director of the ACLU Speech Privacy and Technology Project, and Edward Snowden's lead attorney noted, no government will voluntarily disclose its own crimes. For that, we need brave sources who have first-hand evidence, and we need a free press and brave publishers who are willing to bring this information to the people to whom it belongs. Wisner continued that the U.S. regime characterizes that collaboration between a courageous source and a courageous publisher as a conspiracy. Of course, it was a conspiracy, Wisner said. I think good investigative journalism is always a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to end the monopoly on information that governments control and to give people the seat at the table that they must have in order for us to be able to judge powerful people and hold them accountable. But this is the first time the U.S. government has charged this kind of collaboration as a criminal conspiracy. John Shipton, Assange's father, denounced the ceaseless malicious abuse of his son while confined in the UK. Shipton said the conduct of Assange's case is an embarrassment that has undermined the UK's claim to respect freedom of speech and the rule of law. Assange is appealing the UK Home Office extradition order to the High Court of Justice, arguing that he would be extradited for a political offence in violation of the US-UK extradition treaty. As WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Christine Harafson said at the tribunal, not only is espionage a pure form of political offence, but the indictment against Julian Assange is littered with accusations of political motives.
Sheikh Baqir Sharif Al-Qarashi decides to compile.
So we can consider Sayyid Hadi Khosrow Shahi.
Shahid Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr.
He was born in Kadhimiya.
The first and the most important thing that we can learn from Allama Tabatabai is his great effort.
In this regard, I should like to say that one of the great benefits of the late Ayatollah Sayyid Mahmoud Shahrudi was.
When we look at the works of late
Rawzati,
there is a famous sentence from Mirza Khalil Qamarani that he says in Farsi, "Tuhid kalame baraye kalame tuhid."
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program The Teacher, an introduction into the thoughts and works of the most outstanding Muslim Shiite personalities and scholars all across the world of Islam. I am Atta, the host of this program. I have two very special guest speakers from the Islamic House of Afghan for today's discussion, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Shaykh Rouhani. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about one of the most outstanding muhaddisin and mutakallimin of the 6th century Hijra. He is no one but Abul Futuh al-Razi. His complete name is Jamaluddin Hussein ibn Ali Nishaburi Razi, but he is mainly known as Abul Futuh al-Razi, and his magnum opus, Rawzul Janan wa Ruhul Janan. This is the most outstanding exegesis in the Persian language. We will, of course, talk more about this book. Before that, let's be more familiar with the early life of Abul Futuh al-Razi. Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, Jamaluddin Hussein ibn Ali Nishaburi Razi, who was famous by the name of Abul Futuh al-Razi, he was from the Mufassirin and from the narrators of the Hadith in the Shia.
Yes.
And he was definitely like in the 6th century Hijri. And obviously, when we look at his forefathers, we can see that he belonged to the tribe of Khaza'a.
Yes.
And this is actually was the tribe of Nafi' bin Badil bin Warqa Khaza'i, who was the companion of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
This has been written on the gravestone of this
yes.
man.
Yes.
Okay.
And also, obviously, he was from the students of Zamakhshari, one of the famous, you know, Mufassirin of the Quran, yes. and the scholar in the literature, Arabic literature.
Okay.
Because in the Arabic literature, sometimes we refer to Zamakhshari and his. You know, his works. On the other hand, we have many famous personalities like Ibn Shahr-e Ashub or Ibn Hamza Tusi. He was the teacher of these two and the other famous personalities. He belonged to a scholarly family. They were known as a scholarly family. And all of their like family, they had many people who were, you know, were famous because yes. of their knowledge, because of their grace. And this chain which he used to belong to, they were famous amongst the Shia scholars. Yes. Also, when we look at the statement by Qazi Nurullah Shushtari, he also has praised the family of Abul Futuh Razi as the family who were the great scholars who were there. In their family. On the other hand, what we can see is we can see when he was the student of Zamakhshari and other teachers that he had, obviously there we can see that even Hassan ibn Muhammad Tusi was one of his teachers. And Qazi Hassan Astarabadi.
Yes.
They were the teachers of this personality. Such a person who's been, you know, trained. We cannot say educate. You yes. know, I don't want to use the word yes, educate yes. because in the Islamic seminary, it's more training.
Training, that's right.
Rather than just merely studying and getting
you
some
mean
education.
Spiritual training is also important.
Both.
That's right.
Because okay. in the Islamic study, actually, the person who is coming and who is learning some Islamic studies, he also tries to train himself according to those teachings.
Yes.
So when he had some such teachers who trained him well, therefore we can see his outputs as well.
Okay.
For example, Ibn Shahr-e Ashub, one of the famous personalities.
Yes.
This is the output of Abul Futuh Razi.
Okay.
Like Ali ibn Ubaidullah Razi, Muhammad bin Ali ibn Hamza Tusi, and many more. So
right.
all these, what we see is basically these were due to his own personality, his way of getting trained by such teachers,
okay.
and his highly status in the Shia scholars.
That's all right. Whenever Sheikh Rouhani, the name of Abul Futuh al-Razi is, we can say, called out, the title of the book, Rawzul Janan wa Ruhul Janan, fi Tafsir al-Quran, comes into the scene, one of the most outstanding exegeses of the Holy Quran, of course, in Persian language, maybe the first or the most ancient, we can call tafsir of the Holy Quran by this outstanding man. On that time, it seems to be a very important work, a very important struggle by him. Let's talk more about this book and the other aspects of the scholarly life of Abu al-Futuh al-Razi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Of course, the book, Tafsir Rawl al-Janan, Waruh al-Janan, which is written by Abu al-Futuh al-Razi, was of course the first Persian tafsir or commentary on the Holy Quran, which is written by this great scholar. Of course, regarding his personality, his scholarly personality, we can mention that all, let's say, many great scholars in the different centuries of Islam praised and appreciated his book and his works. Of course, since it was the first complete, let's say, tafsir or commentary on the Quran, which was written by the language of another language other than Arabic.
Yes.
It was very much welcomed in this area. You know, it seems that Abu al-Futuh al-Razi was among those kind of scholars who were very much in contact with the people, with the community, and they understood that what the people need. So that is why you see in those centuries, mostly the books were written in Arabic. But he actually started to write a book in Farsi.
Yes.
In Persian language.
In Persian language, that's
because,
right.
Because so there were many Muslims who were, let's say, who spoke with the Persian language. So, of course, they were in need of the tafsir or commentary on the Holy Quran.
And the whole Quran, this is outstanding,
course,
you know.
From the first surah till the next and the end of the Quran, the whole book was covered by him in his tafsir.
How is his tafsir done? I mean, what do we mean when we say, for example, from the first surah up to the last surah, he gave a tafsir? What do we mean by tafsir in Farsi language now?
Tafsir, we mean that it's a kind of explanation about each and everything in the ayat of the Holy Quran. For example, these kind of scholars or ulama or mufassirin, first, for example, they translate very simply and easily the ayat of the Quran for the people who do not know, for example, the Arabic language.
Okay.
Then, of course, they went on in a bit details. They actually deal with each and every, for example, let's say, like, kind of technical terms, or let's say sometimes they're kind of difficult words that has its own, let's say, specific kind of meanings or technical meanings. And, of course, they explain those things. And then they refer to riwayat and ahadith and ayat. And some of, for example, the explanations that are made by some, let's say, ulama and scholars, let's say, a'imma alayhim salatu wasalam, sometimes even sahabi or the companions of the Holy Prophet, or the students of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam, if there were some, for example, explanations or expressions regarding the ayat of the Quran, of course, they refer to them to better explain the meaning of the ayat for the people.
That's
so that's why I think it is a very nice book. It is a voluminous kind of tafsir, which includes like 20 volumes nowadays. It is published. So the other point is that in this tafsir, Abu al-Futuh al-Razi not only expressed the ayat simply, but also he explained, for example, the position or the status of A'imma alayhim salatu wasalam, Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam, in the Holy Quran. And of course, he tried.
So this is a complete tafsir of the Holy Quran based on the Shi'ite point
of view.
Because there are so many ayahs in the Holy Quran which refer to the status of Ahlul Bayt without naming them directly, you know.
This is
important.
And also, it's really interesting that this tafsir is a kind of kalami tafsir, theological tafsir, because sometimes he tries, for example, to bring some kind of arguments, reasons, proofs, for example, to express some ayat of the Holy Quran, to defend or to, let's say, express the main principles of Shi'ite teachings and doctrines.
That's right. I will get back to you, Shaykh Rouhani. But Sayyid Mohsen, it is also included among the Ijtihadi tafsir. I mean, it is also, as they categorize, it is Ijtihadi tafsir. What is this type of tafsir exactly that Abu al-Futuh al-Razi did?
Well, obviously, in the tafsir, we have different categories. Number one, a tafsir which is made by the ayat.
Yes.
Quran bil-Quran.
Okay.
Like Al-Mizan.
Like
Allama Tabatabai has brought the exegesis or commentary of the verse from another verse and tried to explain. We have tafsir al-Riwa'i. A tafsir, the explanation or commentary of the verses in the narrations of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. What Prophet has said about this. We have the tafsir ijtihadi, is the tafsir in which the writer, he comments from himself
mm-hmm.
because he's bringing the logical proof maybe okay. or intellectual proof there. And he also brings the verses and the riwayat as well. Since the writer's own, we can say, commentary is there, that's why it is known as ijtihadi tafsir.
Okay.
Now, the point here is that Abu al-Futuh al-Razi was basically a khatib, mm-hmm. a speaker as well.
Yes.
He wasn't just mere a scholar who used to teach, you know, the Islamic studies like yes. to his students.
Yes.
He was also having a mimbar. He used to go to the pulpit and deliver the speeches to the people.
Yes.
Now, this makes him unique amongst the people.
Okay.
And this was one of the advantages that he had, that the way he used to convey, like he knew how to convey the message to the general public.
Okay.
And since he was a strong speaker,
yes.
when he came to the tafsir, obviously, other than narrating the verses or maybe the narrations, he brought his proofs as well over there.
Yes.
And this made it, you know, the ijtihadi. So when it is called ijtihadi, it's because of that. And what we can see, even if it is ijtihadi, yes. it was praised by many scholars in the Shia. And obviously, the description that he has given, for example, for some verses, he brought some Persian poetry.
Poetry, okay.
To explain the verse.
More. That's right.
And there are other things as well that he brought.
Regarding the ayahs, his method is really, we can't say, outstanding, because he usually, at the very beginning and the preface of his book, has categorized the ayat into four important categories. Number one are those ayahs of the Holy Quran that are not understandable by the people. Its explanation is so much difficult, and it can only be explained in the words of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The other ones are the mujmal, muhkam, and mutashabid. You know, these four outstanding categories are given over there. What are they exactly? I mean, can you give us examples?
Well, obviously, the first thing, the first category is that the understanding of those, you know, verses are not possible, but Allah knows it. It is kind of secret between Allah uh-huh. and the authorities, like Ahlul Bayt.
Ahlul Bayt and Prophet.
For example, he brings the example, like in chapter Bani Israel, we have, يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الرُّوحِ mm-hmm. They ask you about the spirit.
Okay.
قُلِ الرُّوحُ مِنْ أَمْرِ رَبِّي. Say that the ruh is from the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So what is a spirit? Don't tell what is spirit. It's the command of Allah. So Allah didn't explain much about this word ruh. So it is for the Allah. And there are, for example, other things as well. The second category is muhkam. The words of the Qur'an exactly means what they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهُ أَحَدْ. Allah is one.
Yes.
There is no hidden message in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we have a verse which has a secret or hidden message in it, or maybe, yes. you know, it's an idiom.
A metaphor or idiom.
A metaphor
That's
or
right.
idiom,
yes.
which means something else. For yes. example, بَيْنَ يَدَيْ. بَيْنَ يَدَيْ, literal meaning is what is in between my hands, two hands.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not, does it means. It means whatever you have in front of you.
Or يَدُ for example.
يَدُ اللَّهِ.
Yes.
Hands of Allah. فَوْقَ أَيْدِهِمْ. يَدُ اللَّهِ فَوْقَ أَيْدِهِمْ. The hand of Allah is above all hands.
Okay.
It means that the power of Allah is above all mm-hmm. powers, because hand mm-hmm. or the punch is the sign
but
of
muhkam
power.
But muhkam ones are direct orders
yes.
or direct
the
sentences.
Direct orders,
yes.
direct sentences, the verses that are clear, there is no hidden or maybe, you know, anything else.
Okay.
And then the third is mujmal, which, you know, needs more, you know, explanation about it. There is, you know, explanation. Maybe we have the general rule in that. For example, aqimu salat.
Yes.
Establish prayer. Now, how to establish it?
Shara al-Islam has to explain yes. it for us. Or for example, that's right.
For
okay.
example, we need a prophet who yes. needs to explain, like you need to stand, you need to do qiyam, then sujood.
Or an imam or a faqih, for
yes.
example, at our time.
So yes. so they have to. Okay. Obviously, these things are being explained by the prophet. So we have okay. general rules in the Quran.
Yes.
When we say everything is in Quran,
mm-hmm.
we mean that. Everything generally has been explained in the Quran, but the details are not there.
Okay.
So there is a need of details.
That's right.
And then the fourth category is mutashabe.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe one word has two meanings, for example.
That's right.
right. Or something which is, you know, confusing or maybe...
Ambiguous.
Ambiguous.
Okay.
So these are the categories
that are
which
given
he brought.
Right.
So he,
okay.
he divided the verses into these four categories.
Very good.
Basically.
Very good. Okay. That's all right. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, anything missed about the scholar life of Abu al-Futuh al-Razi or Rawza al-Jannan?
I think one of the very good and great lessons that we can take from Abu al-Futuh al-Razi and his tafsir for nowadays people is this, that nowadays we have Muslims all across the world speaking with different languages. But unfortunately, the commentaries or, let's say, explanations of ayat and also riwayat in different languages is not available for these people. What we see in the 5th century of Islam, and this alim or this great scholar actually wrote his book and his work in a language other than Arabic.
Yes.
So I think nowadays we can just take this lesson from this alim that we have to provide all the Muslims with different languages with the kind of commentaries or explanation of ayat and riwayat.
That's right.
And it would be a very great lesson that you can take from this alim.
Okay, beside this tafsir, he has also so many other works. The most important ones are Ruhul Ahbab and Ruhul Albab fi Sharh al Shahab. It is an explanation on Shahab al Akhbar by one Shafi'i man and scholar regarding the sermons of Prophet Muhammad. The other ones is Rasale Yuhanna, again from the tongue of the Christian, but on the topic of imamat. Tabsarat al-Awam fi Ma'rifat al-Maghalat al-Anam, criticizing on Mansur al-Hallaj and his ideas. We know that, you know, some mystical and Sufi, for example, ideas were over there. They have been criticized by this man. And so many other outstanding works like Manhaj al-Manahij, which is a research on Mazahib al-Arba'a, I mean the four important denominations of Islam, and how to prove the concept of imamat according to the Shiite point of view. All in all, his works, we can say, were really great and were really outstanding, especially the book is still today. Of course, the Persian language that he written is difficult to understand for today's Farsi speakers, but there are still some people who did, we can say, explanation on this book in the simplified Persian language in today as well. What is known is that he passed away in the year 552 or 556. It is not exactly known. According to his last will and testament, he was taken into the holy city of Ray, and he was buried in vicinity of the tomb of Hazrat Abdulazim al-Hasani in the city of Ray. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi and Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice explanation regarding the life of Abu al-Futuh al-Razi, the author of the magnum opus Rawz al-Janan wa Rawh al-Janan fi Tafsir al-Quran. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi Amal.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Back to Reality. This is Asma. Just like always, I have the pleasure to be here. And in here, I have two very dear guests with me, Brother Hassanain and Sister Zainab from India. Welcome to today's episode.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, sisters, and assalamu alaikum, everyone listening to the IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
Alaikum assalam, and also from Anne, say salam to all of you and the audience.
So it's a pleasure to have you both in here. And just like always, we're going to have pretty much of nice stuff to talk about. There's this thing, sometimes as you sit alone with yourself and then you think about what is going to happen after I am no longer alive, you know? And then, again, you would think that, okay, I have been living for 50 years, and then after that I will die, and then there would be not a single footprint of my name everywhere. And I would be forgotten forever. Mm-hmm. So how does it feel? Have you ever thought about that? For 1 year, for 2 years, for 3 years, for 5 years, for 10 years. But eventually they're going to forget me, right?
Oh, well, the bitter truth that I have seen is that if someone dies, it's not just 1 year, 2 years, after just 4 days.
Yeah.
People slowly and steadily start forgetting.
No, let's just be optimist in this point and say after 10 years, they're going to forget me. And after that 10 years, there'd be no more of me.
Yeah.
It basically depends how much of value you had in amongst people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that determines, you know, how much will you be remembered.
Well, you know what? If I do not accomplish anything, if I do not write a book,
mm-hmm.
if I do not create, I don't know, anything special, if I do not invent electricity, then I am not valuable?
No, it's not like that. You know, maybe, you know, once a year your family will visit your grave.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, when we are talking about people...
Yeah.
So, you know, someone who did not have any influence in the society.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, like, you know, the circle is going to be smaller of the people remembering him or her.
Well, I have a change of opinion over here. I think that your question is like, if you don't have any works, if you don't mm-hmm. have a book published, if you don't have a poem written, if you don't have, I don't know, other
anything accomplished, yeah.
Contributions. So, to the society, you're going to be forgotten. I think, I still think, like, if I don't have anything, but I can, after my death, live for years, if I live better life right now. For example, if I practice patience, if I practice love, if I practice...
Modesty, morality, modesty, and everything like
it's
that.
It's going to get transmitted into my generations.
Mm-hmm.
And when I am patient and next of my generations, this transmitted into them, that patient, and then my generations are actually showing that patience. I'm living again. My soul yeah. is again, like, happy.
So here's a point I would like to add it after we go for a break. Welcome back, dear listeners of Back to Reality, where we are talking about this very fascinating topic of the thing that says, after my death, there'd be no more of me. And that is really sad. And then you both were just saying that, okay, after we die, if we have accomplished something, if we have a generation after us, then there would be a name of us. And eventually, after a year, after 10 years, some people would remember me. Or, I don't know, they send me some salutations or whatever. But I would say, what if there's...
Oh, yeah, excuse me, sister. I would like to add something over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you mentioned, like, you know, if I didn't write books and all, like, you know, if I did not have any...
Contribution
to the society, or yeah. I wasn't influential for the society. So, but by this, we do not mean that, you know, these are the standards...
Yeah.
In the law, like, you know, near Allah. Like, it depends, like, how good human being you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, sister mentioned, like, she mentioned a really good point. Like, you know, if you're a good human being and then transmits, you know, from generations mm-hmm. to generations. And that is indeed, you know, upbringing good children.
For example,
is sadaqah jariyah.
See Lady Fatima Tuzar, salamu alayha, see Lady Zainab, salamu alayha, mm-hmm. they experienced patience and they're still living today.
Yeah.
They are still living today. I don't remember any books written by Lady Zainab Salam Alayha, but I remember the patience she...
No, she doesn't have to write a book because her books are her children.
Practical. She has, you know, practically what I mean? Shown
I mean,
that...
They are different, you know? If now the audience, I'm sure they would have the same idea as I have. See, I am an ordinary person. I might not even accomplish anything in this world. When I sit and talk to myself in my throat and say, okay, after your death, I think there'd be no more of you.
It's self-love that makes you think like that. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of self-love for ourselves. And self-love is one of the greatest loves in this world. It should be there, but not to that extent that it hurts you. Mm-hmm. I don't want to bore the world after me. Like, why should I live for, like, why should I be remembered? Yeah. But what is important is, like, that humanness of me should get transmitted.
And there's also something, as you dig deeper into this topic, then you would understand that, okay, why, just as you said, why other people have to remember me? As long as I have been obedient to Allah and He is satisfied with me, this world is finished to me after my death.
It's a blessing. Just now think the opposite. Mm-hmm. Now what if people remember you and you're gone?
So, brother, you're taking away
their happiness. You're making them sad. You're making them. It's one of the blessings of Allah that people forget.
Yeah,
but because if a mother loses a son and then mm-hmm. she remembers it after, I don't know, for her long, as long as she lives, if mm-hmm. she remembers the way how he died and she remembers it each and every day, her life will become a mess. We're not authorized to get remembering everything.
Exactly.
It's a blessing.
You know, as I've mentioned earlier, like, you know, being remembered by the people is not the standard, you know, to be a good human. Mm-hmm. Like, you be a good human, like, you know, in fact, you know, we are living in today's world. Like,
In the eyes of Allah, we must be a good human.
Exactly. Being. In today's world, you know, good people are supposed to be bad, you know.
All the ideas and notions have changed.
Yeah, so this is not the standard, like, being remembered by the people. Uh-huh. So, and as mentioned in the hadith, like, you know, live among people in such a way, when you die, they weep over you. So, I guess, you know, this, in this hadith, in this narration, Imam Ali wants to say that, you know, you live among people in such a way that, you know, people liked your company.
Exactly. Like your goodness.
Yeah, your goodness. You had a good influence in the society. Mm-hmm. The main aim, the main motive over here, the main motive is not to be remembered by people or, you know, gain fame or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now, if I have lived in a good way, people would weep over me after for just a short time, and then they would forget about me, and it does not matter to me because...
If you actually lived in that way, then people will actually weep over you. And the best example is about Abdullah al-Hussein. Even after 1400 years, we see every year in Muharram, like in fact the whole year, people still weep over Imam Hussein and remember Imam Hussein and his sacrifices.
Yeah, that's very true. So I guess this is a time for another break. Let's go for change of mood.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Dear listeners of Arab English Radio, this is Back to Reality. And in here, Brother Hassanein and Sister Zainab are talking about what happens after our death, actually, in a different format, because we have usually talked about what happens to us after we die in the other world. But then today we're talking about what happens to us after we die in this world. So is there anything else you want to add?
You should live your life in such a way that when you depart from this world, people should actually remember you.
Mm-hmm.
So from this statement, we mean that, you know, that's not the aim to be remembered by people. But our main goal is to live life in such a way.
Exactly.
That you should be remembered.
Because I have always thought of it, you know. Why should people remember me after?
Yeah, and if you actually spend your life in this way, you will be remembered. And every coin has two sides. And the other side of this topic might be, you know, when we try to align it with our lives. The other side of this topic might be, you know, people who run after fame, who run after like worldly pleasures and worldly life. And if they think about this, you know, what happens after I die, I depart from this world? Like, you know, I have a big name today in this world, but once I die, no one's going to remember me.
Exactly. This topic reminds me of one of the experiences of my life when I also cried. It was the time when I was coming from Kashmir to Iran and in my university to my all batchmates, especially to my friend circle who was very, very close to me.